Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Starving Artist Podcast. I am your host, Rocky Cotard, and today we have a very special guest that we will be meeting with. And obviously, we're always grateful that you're coming in and tuning into our podcast, where we get to work with really awesome artists who are working in their field. And we always want to bring different individuals to our platform so that you may benefit from the experience. We always thank you guys for listening to us as frequently as we make podcasts. So we're back with a new season. We're here with Michael Dismuke, and we'll be talking about his journey as a writer to a superhero comic. So we're excited to share that experience with you. And hopefully you're able to experience the joys of that. Our other hosts, I will give them an opportunity to introduce themselves as well, and then I'll move over to Michael Dismuke so that you can do a proper introduction of yourself.
All right, all right. So I am Professor X, Xavier, illustrator, designer, and I am a co-host of this podcast, and I'm happy to kick off season two with Michael. And we're going to get into this, but we're going to kick it to our next co-host, Katrina.
And my name is Katrina. I usually say I'm not an artist, but today I think I'm going to say I haven't found my artistic passion yet.
Yes.
That's right. Anyone who spends enough time at anything becomes an artist of their own form.
Honestly,
right?
True.
Yeah.
So Michael Dismuke, I always tell I'm the average person, the average guy who, you know, grew up liking certain genres and one day hope to have a little credit on something, whether it's Marvel or Star Trek or something like that. I'm like everyone else, you know, got to pay the bills, got to do the day job. And so it took a long road to, you know, get to my own first published comic. So I kind of understand what people are going through there.
So Mike, I'm going to start more with the day job. Now I looked a lot at your LinkedIn. Just talk a little bit about what you're doing now with the, I think it's the Eden Project or...
Yeah, so I work for an affordable housing developer in California. It's an interesting way my career ended up because I started working for an ad agency back during the dot-coms when everybody was successful. So that was my first experience, you know, working in marketing. One of my clients, because I had my own ad agency, they were in real estate, which then really turned me on to, of course, you know, the lucrative real estate market of the Bay Area. So as the dot-coms went under, I hopped over to real estate management, which has me working where I am now at Eden Housing. So what I do with them now, we're about 500 employees. I basically take the strategic goals and then I build the curriculum and the metrics to help each employee in every department hit that strategic goal. So whether they need resources, tools, training, peer-to-peer, I structure that for the company, make sure morale is high, and handle all their internal communication. So I do get to write every day. It's more technical and more motivational. You know, I go around the industry and also do different types of motivational classes. So that's my day job. But it again, sharpens me for my hobby, which is writing, because you have to be flawless in internal communication. So it's helped me a lot over the years develop a quick writing style, meeting deadlines, and editing myself.
Now, that plays into our theme for this episode, which is the art of storytelling. And you talk about marketing. You're like a jack of all trades. You're very talented. You have like a lot of different things that you do, a lot of different things that you're competent at doing. How does that get into the art side, writing stories? Talk about that passion.
Sure. Well, I'm fortunate enough, again, to work in a day job that is about storytelling. People are only interested in stories. I had the opportunity and privilege to get taught by a person named Andy Goodman. You may know him from maybe he did assistant speech writing for Al Gore's Inconvenient Truth. When he had that documentary, he runs storytelling workshops out of LA, which I've had the privilege to go to work with him at my company. We bring him in to help us revise our story, because as you know, advertising is branding, is storytelling. So that structure, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit later, is fundamental whether you're writing a paragraph to motivate an employee to do something, or whether you're trying to put together a graphic novel or even a gaming module, which I work on gaming modules for Star Trek Adventures.
Yeah. You know, Michael, I think like one point that I find interesting that you mentioned is dealing with like, you know, the day job piece and how it feeds into, you know, the passion that you have for writing and things like that. Because for me, I also have a day job. That's not necessarily directly my field, but it relates. Because, you know, I'm into the arts. So I'm working with, you know, college students who are passionate about the arts. And so it doesn't necessarily feed the artistic, like, directly. But in a way, I'm still getting a piece of that. So I think I definitely hear what you're saying in that area. And I think...
Well, everyone you meet... Well, I tell people too, everyone you meet is an opportunity. Like I'm big into never burn a bridge. And my personal mission statement is, you know, that I find happiness in helping other people succeed. Mm-hmm. That really has to be the collaborative artistic approach nowadays, mm-hmm. because there's so many opportunities, whether it's going to be on YouTube or Instagram or self-publishing your own work through Kickstarter, Indiegogo. There's so much opportunity like there never was before, just to get something published at a reasonable cost, mm-hmm. too. So it's not about for me making money. It's you know, people who paint, people who play the guitar. And so storytelling and writing to me is the same way. It's not about the money making, though that's not bad. It's nice when it happens. but if you love it, you're just going to do it. And if you mm-hmm. run with the right circles, eventually you're going to find opportunities to get some work published.
Yep.
I found this really interesting when you were reading and going over some of the things about your bio. You met the editor-in-chief at Marvel Comics. First of all, what was that like?
Okay, so it was 2003. So here's what's funny. Again, I'm always looking for opportunities. At that time, I had my ad agency was still alive. And at that time, Justin Timberlake had just released one of the hottest albums out. Mm-hmm. And they had done a cameo, NSYNC had done a cameo in an X-Men comic book. And it got rave reviews, people loved it. It was a Wolverine comic book, actually. And they were like in a fight club or a fight zone and in the audience. And then I saw a news article where, you know, JT, they're into Marvel Comics. And all of a sudden I said, man, that's a genre that I knew Marvel had been trying to break into for a while was women. You know, age 13 to 24, there were other genres and cartoons that were getting that attention. And all of a sudden I said, okay, well, it's not that hard to find JT's publishing group, his agent. So Wright Entertainment out of Florida. Wow. And I said, hey, and I said, I wrote them a letter. I said, you know, I think there's an opportunity here for Justin Timberlake to be the star in a comic book and see if we can capture a genre. And so then they sent me a letter back for exploration. It's not uncommon to do when you're exploring projects, like an interest letter. And they wrote it back saying, yeah, I could go ahead and explore it for them. So I sent that letter over to Marvel Comics and I said, hey, you know, this is an opportunity. Let's see if there's a pairing. At that time, Bill Gemmis, who was the editor in chief, he was starting a new comic line called Epic. And Epic was going to be for artists who were new. And just to try a new line. And so at 4 o'clock in the morning, all of a sudden my phone rings. Now, anyone who knows me, don't call me after 9. And I don't start my day till 6, right? But I look at the number, I'm like, wait, New York City? And I said, and I put it down, didn't pick it up. And then all of a sudden, boop, okay, voicemail. So I'm mad now. I'm like, okay, someone better be dying, right? Because I had family in Brooklyn Heights at that time. I was like, okay, someone better be sick. And so I check it out. And it's Bill Gemmis. Now, my wife thought an earthquake hit because I jump out of bed and I'm freaking out listening to his call. It's like, hey, we like your thing. How soon can you fly out here? Oh my God. So of course I went ahead and called. I was there 2 days later in New York. And he met and he gave me the best advice, even though it didn't work. Let me tell in chronological order. He gets there and he says, okay, suppose this deal doesn't work out. He says, just so you know, we're only going to cut deals with people we know that can sell 50,000 units. So if you have your own comic book, sell 50,000 units, then we're going to look at you. You know, of course, and or if Justin Timberlake wants to do a comic book. Short end of the story is I came back to California. I let Ryan Entertainment know what the deal was. They looked at the profit margin, which was significant. And we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they were like, meh, not enough for Justin. Thumbs down. But what it taught me, what I got out of that experience was they're humans too. The editors in chief, the entertainment industries, these stars, they're human. And so they're going to, at like any story, they're going to pay attention if there's interest to them. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, I have a good idea, me. It's really like, okay, what am I doing that's in the interest of all parties involved where they see a profit margin? Mm-hmm. If you're going to try making a business out of writing. And that built up my confidence where I was like, okay, I'm pushing forward now and I'm knocking on doors that when I have a project, I may have to change some of my story to get someone interested in it. Mm. So not being so ego driven by my idea, but really finding out using all these skilled people out there to sharpen it into something that's marketable. If I want something that's mass market, if not, then I can write whatever I want if I only want four people reading it, right?
Yeah.
That's some really good insight. I'll be honest. You know, that's actually my issue with writing at current. Like I think the difference or the tug and pull between the writer who has this idea that they're really passionate about, that they believe in, and like they love it the way it is, and then the public and what they're looking for.
Hey, what I teach people to do is go listen to the first cut of a song. It ain't nothing like it ends up on the pop billboard. The first cut's never like it ends up for mass marketing, and writing or any type of art is the same. You know, you can be Vincent Van Gogh and not mm-hmm. be popular and then die and be popular. And hope someone finds you past your death. But if you're going to try to really have something marketable where it becomes a sustainable income, mm-hmm. you got to find out what the people want.
You got to feed the people.
Now, you talked a lot about not missing an opportunity and making connections with people. And we know from reading your bio that you yourself are a writer, but you have the graphic novels. So how do you go about finding someone to illustrate your vision?
Yeah, that was the hardest thing. I mean, honestly, if I could draw like I could write, I would be Jim Lee. I would be Will Sparta. I'd be Alan Moore. I mean, I would never come out of my room and I would just like slide my pages under the door to under whoever the wants table. To buy. I'd be so busy, you know? So maybe it's a good thing the universe didn't make me a writer and an artist because I may never leave my room. Mm-hmm. So what happened though is that Ape, which is the independent publishers a convention, it's a subsidiary of San Diego Comic-Con that they used to have up here in San Francisco. One day some friends called me and they knew I had a story and what I was writing. They said, Michael, you know, they have something that's like speed dating. It's called the Comic Creator Connection. And if you go there, you just show up with your stories and you're going to get 5 minutes with writers like speed dating. And everyone just gets up in there. You have to sign up because they're only going to take 20 writers and 20 artists. So I signed up and I was like, okay, let's try it. Cause I really didn't know where to go from there. I'm like, I'm not selling 50,000 units. I had a day job. I had other priorities. I wasn't about to star. I didn't want to be a starving artist. I really didn't, you know.
Me neither.
Right. So I showed up and it was scary in some points because I'm sitting, because you have to spend 5 minutes with these people. And 5 minutes I learned can be a very long time when you're with the wrong person.
That's true.
Yeah. Right. And so I'm sitting here with artists and I'm like, I want to get away. Finally, I came down to one of the last people. Her name's Susan Chang. She was so quiet, very diminutive, but her art flew off the page and she was big into manga. And I never thought I would do a manga book. Honestly, I came in thinking, okay, I want it to be Calvin and Hobbes style. Bill Watterson, love him. She could not write a story as hard as I cannot draw a lick. And I said, this is perfect. There wasn't going to be any competition. It was going to be completely collaborative. I needed what she had and she needed what I had. And I told her, she was so shy and so diminutive. She was a graduate of the Art Institute. I said, you know what? I got the marketing background. You just draw and I'll get us out there.
Yeah.
She joined the ride and her work just got better every single issue. It was a really nice experience.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I like the stories, hearing that, because a lot of times, you know, artists are against each other and sometimes you're in the same market and you have to find an edge. You have to find where you can differentiate yourself from other people. But here you guys are coming together. You're using the best of what you have and she's using the best of what she has.
I think sometimes with, you know, writers that I've worked with, it oftentimes tends to be like, hey, this person's awesome. So I have to bring my work to that level of awesomeness. So it's not necessarily competition, but so much as I want to make sure I'm matching the energy of the work.
Yeah.
So I really think, like, in the way that you mentioned the balance of your writing ability and their, you know, creative ability in the sense of the illustration, that just sounded so awesome. That sounded so cool. Sweet.
The Starving Artist Podcast is a band of super talented, sophisticated rock stars. We aim to challenge ourselves and the status quo. Now, the Starving Artist Podcast Network is expanding nationally from New York City to Portland, Oregon, and broadcasting on local TV courtesy of Urban Media Art Studio right here in Malden, Massachusetts. Please support the movement by subscribing to our YouTube channel, Starving Artist Podcast, and follow us on Instagram at starving_artist_podcast. You can also find us on Patreon and listen to our podcast on Anchor, Apple, Google, SoundCloud, and Spotify. Rocky, Xavier, and I want to sincerely thank all who have been loyal ambassadors of the Starving Artist Podcast Network. But we ain't done, y'all. Stay tuned and check out the latest and greatest. This is your girl, Katrina, and I'm out of here.
All right. Hello, folks. We are back. Thank you for staying with us. Once again, we are with Michael Dismuke. And we are discussing the comics. Thank you for staying with us throughout the show. So to kind of bring matters back, Michael, to the graphic novel piece that you have, how did the idea to incorporate childhood games come about in your graphic novels? But before I get into that, I'd like to give you an opportunity to kind of speak about the premise of the book Game Masters, just so that our viewers can really understand our questions a little bit. So feel free to give us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, first of all, I do believe that the game known as Rochambeau, Rock, Paper, Scissors is the ultimate form of justice in the galaxy. I want everyone to keep in mind that it's lasted longer than the Ten Commandments. Like, even the Ten Commandments aren't in force right now. But Rochambeau is, you know, kids on the playground will solve any argument with Rochambeau, even adults, you know, it's just the thing. So we were this was 4 years after the Bill Jemis incident, and I was standing in line at Comic-Con with my friends, like, man, I got to come up with something original. I don't want to just do a superhero comic book. That, you know, everyone can do a superhero comic book. Like, it has to be something that everyone knows but hasn't been done yet. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, we were standing in line. For some reason, we Rochambeau'd. And I went, hey, Dan, that's my friend. I went, Dan, imagine if you had a bunch of kids, because there's this TV show called Recess. I don't know if you remember Recess growing up. And it was on great. I said, but imagine if all the superheroes were Batman-esque villains and heroes, but totally based off schoolyard games, which kids don't play anymore. So we sat there, we started listing them off. Freeze Tag, Hopscotch, Duck Goose, Patty Cakes, mm-hmm. Four Square, Tic-Tac-Toe. We started going, and I was like, shut up. This is a good idea. Shut up. Because we were in line for Hall H, which is like 6,000 people, right? And so I was like, be quiet. But man, my mind goes that once I have the story, I started writing up all these stories in my mind. So I went home from Comic-Con, laid out the first four issues, and then that got me to where I started shopping it, to what I was talking about before, to comic book, Ape convention where I met Susan. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's where the idea came from, was I just needed an original idea that everyone would know and then just package it in a fun way.
Awesome.
Yeah, I like the idea, and I was looking at it on Comixology. So on mm-hmm. Amazon, they have their own private, I don't know if it's some type of collaboration. I don't know where Comixology really comes from, because they have some DC comics on there too. But you know, thinking about marketing, thinking about target audience, you know, nowadays we're talking about targeting people. How did you capture a specific audience? Like, what was that audience going to be?
You know, to tell you the truth, very small niche, very Comic-Con centric, very San Francisco independent. If you rely on friends and family to support your business, you will fail. You know, and that's not an insult. It's just, you got to have a viable business on your own, even if you have no friends or family, right? So I niched it out through Kickstarter. So Kickstarter is, of course, a huge community for people who were artistic collaborators. I really feel like I came in at the end of it, because it became very commercial. Now it's very commercial. So you may have to go look at Patreon or Indiegogo to still find the artist community. But that really was huge, was getting through Kickstarter and then going to Comic-Con and getting a booth there at Comic-Con, just to get the word out. And it was just enough, again, to pay for the costs of the artists and publishing costs, and, you know, legal and advertising and stuff like that. So that's where my audience was from people who love comic books. Game Masters is not yet mass market. I'm working on some stuff, which I can't talk about, and hopefully you'll see it one day on a streaming service. But you know, that's when it's really going to hit, is when people I don't know and haven't really met me or had the opportunity to meet me can still get into it. Right now, I have to say that pretty much anybody who's ever who supported my book has had the opportunity to meet me at conventions or online or something.
That's awesome. So this is kind of a digression, but in Boston, they have, I'm not sure if you're aware of MICE, Massachusetts Independent Comic Expo.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, so it's kind of Boston, or it happens in Cambridge in Massachusetts, but it's this kind of artist alley, like mini convention, but there's just so many different individuals who come into it, and it's all about independent comic makers.
That's exactly what APE is, exactly, oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. I love those things, I'm not even gonna lie. Yeah. Like, just like for our listeners and everybody who's out there, like I always recommend going to one of those. I brought my sisters and my cousin, and the experience for the reader, and it almost felt like going to an amusement park.
Honestly. It is. And honestly, I view those as networking conferences. Mm-hmm. I really do, because who's going to be there? I went 7 years to Comic-Con in a mm-hmm. row.
Yeah.
To build up the network. And then finally, the people who are behind Comic Creator Connection invited me to do a panel at Comic-Con, you know, because they knew me. They saw I was really serious about promoting my work, that I was doing the work myself, not expecting other people to do the work for me. Once they saw that, they're like, okay, come on, get up here, you know?
Yeah.
So those are great. I mean, if you are an artist in your community and you don't know any other artists, then you're probably having a little problem with marketing.
That's a good point.
Yep.
So back to the networking and that, have you heard of SCBWI, Societies, Book Illustrators and Writers Club? They're national and regional as well. But they have a lot of talented writers who are the same thing where you mentioned, you know, they're looking for to pair with an illustrator. But could you talk about some of your challenges with writing and storytelling? Because, you know, you're always trying to captivate an audience, no matter what discipline. If you're a fine artist, if you're an illustrator, if you're a designer, if you're a UX, you know, you're thinking about the end user. So what are some of the challenges?
Well, you know, it's always going to be hard to turn somebody on who's not naturally into whatever genre you're writing. Mm-hmm. Converting someone to like that genre, that's like getting my mom to like Star Wars. Even though, believe me, she was around it all day long. She hears it to this day. If I asked her mom R2-D2, she'd be like, Star Trek? So if someone doesn't have the interest, forget it. Don't waste your time trying to convert somebody. Go to people who are into the genre and tell the stories they want to hear. I mean, how many, are we all into Marvel Comics here? I think we're all, probably all Marvel, right?
Yes.
So a Marvel movie comes.
Yeah, she's on the fringe.
Katrina, you're on the fringe. Okay, but let me ask you, Katrina, if a new Marvel movie comes out, are you most likely going to see it?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Duh.
Right. So Duh. She's right. Yeah. So she's in my market. So just using Katrina as an example now, you know, I don't know if anybody watches WandaVision on Disney Plus.
I just started. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so there's certain things, just looking at WandaVision, that might appeal to Katrina. I may say, okay, I already got Xavier and Rocky. I got them. So why am I even going to spend time marketing to them? But Katrina's on the edge. And how do I get her to turn on WandaVision? Okay, what are her likes? Nowadays, in the days of data and Facebook and Instagram, I can pull a lot of data about what she's looking at. So if she happens to be into Fudge Sundays, and all of a sudden I say, here's a superhero who gets her power from Fudge Sundays, she's going to laugh. Right. So we're in a much more advanced day and age. So I know I was able to target people who like, once I had a manga artist, I was able to target manga. And then I also targeted people who graduated or currently were enrolled at Art Institute in San Francisco. And I promoted her. Like, we have a person who's about to graduate who just got a deal, a publishing deal. Right. So it's very methodical. Again, I have a marketing background. So very
much analytics behind it.
Yeah. It's because I'm sorry to say, we all have good ideas. All art is beautiful to me. I mean, I travel to nice museums around the planet and I'll go to local art shows and I'm equally impressed. The difference between Jackson Pollock and Joe Schmo is opportunity timing. That's all it is, really. I mean, yeah, there's people who are great artists. And I'm not taking that away from them. But it's opportunity and timing. So I'm always thinking, like, where can I market myself? Who should I be rubbing elbows with that they're going to like me enough to say, we want to give you a chance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Because
not having like your family and friends as your business, because that's only going to get you so far. So could you talk a little bit more about how Kickstarter helped you with that too?
Mm.
Yeah. So again, Kickstarter put me, at that time, it was such a good genre that it put me in the path of people who are going there looking for comics. I mean, I don't know if you do it, but if you like a genre on Kickstarter, I just flip through it early in the morning. I'm like, what's that? What's that? Oh, you know, I'll give them $1. Oh, I'll give them $5. Oh, you know what? That's some pretty good art. I'll give them $100, right? Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going for that audience. So, and I didn't overproduce the video either, because for myself, when I see an overproduced video on Kickstarter, why do they need me?
Yep.
That's true.
Okay, no, they got an ad, and there are people with ad agencies who get on Kickstarter now, right? And I said, no, I'm going to be a little grungy. I want to be a little clunky because I need the support. And so I was just very real. I let them know what they were supporting and what my ideals were. So I knew the medium that I was marketing on. And it was just enough. I didn't over ask. I really counted my ducats and figured out how much do I need to get this produced. And I was very transparent about it. And people out there do want to support local artists. So that was a good experience.
I appreciate you, Mike, coming out here,
even on Zoom.
And sharing those nuggets of wisdom with us for this podcast. Go, Katrina.
Yeah, I think I have the same sentiments, but I also wanted to give you an opportunity to tell people where they can find you.
Yeah, please.
Sure. So yeah, you can always just Google my name, Michael Dismuke, D-I-S-M-U-K-E, and type in comics or Star Trek or Game Masters, and you'll either end up at my Comixology site or my blog called Continuing Missions, which is dedicated to Star Trek Adventures RPG.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rocky.
Yeah, I mean, Michael, it has been a real pleasure talking to you. I think, like, you know, the piece about, you know, having an interview where you're learning a ton, like, I actually feel like I learned so much that I'll definitely be, you know, thinking about, especially being that, like, you know, I'm younger, and so it's like interesting to hear the story of somebody who is successful in their field or in that process.
So thank you. And I appreciate all of you. I mean, I know I had the opportunity to meet you earlier with another colleague, put us all in a group together to kind of storytell. I love stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So having a routine of stuff like that, investing in each other's success is wonderful.
Professor Rex, signing off.
This is Katrina, signing off.
Michael Dismuth, signing off.
Rocky Cotard, signing off. The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist Podcast.
The Starving Artist
Podcast.
Yeah, there it is.
Check the code.